Live from Oasis Bar and Grill, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
It's no longer a, are they going to win? It's by how many. And when you talk about the evolution of this franchise, is this the same old Raiders? This is the type of game you can't just win, guys. You have to win in a dominant, convincing fashion to prove you have taken the next step.
Vince is talking, and I'm like, well, can we pump the brakes?
It's like, I knew it.
They're not going to win. How much are they going to win by? They
if
can't run the ball.
If the Red Rifle comes into Vegas and beats the Raiders, this season is off the rails and it's over.
20 men had tried to take him. 20 men had made a slip. 21 would be the Ranger with the big iron on his hip. Big iron on his hip.
Big iron on his hip. I don't really hang with Vince Sapienza very often from Fox 5. And now he's doing the Raider Nation Radio morning show. Is he like that all the time?
Yeah.
Okay. Because if Ray Brewer from the Las Vegas Sun didn't rip his head off, I was like holding onto the chair. As soon as he said they last week, they have to blow out the Panthers, and if they don't win, it's the end of the season. All right, on both ends of the spectrum, Vince, chill.
I mean, they needed to win.
They needed to win.
Is it hope?
Is it the end of the season?
Yeah.
Ooh.
But what does that mean? Like, what was the goal?
Well, the goal of most people is to win. Your goal and you know, a scant minority look at it like it's not realistic to win, so why are you trying to win seven games?
Not with this team. And the problem they have is they keep finishing in the middle of the pack every single year. The worst place to be in the NFL is the middle of the pack. The worst. You would much rather be 2-15 than 8-9.
Raiders on this show, when you're on, have become just a really stupid topic. Because you can't really analyze how most people analyze games.
Yeah.
So none of this matters. Why do we even bring it up?
It is time to start thinking about the future. See what you have. Like, you know, get out.
Why did they try to win from the get-go?
Why did they?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to see. You never know. Like, a couple years ago, 2021. Listen, you can say these things, and I do. In 2021, they were a bad football team. Not a good football team. Should have probably been trying to lose games. What happened? Six of their last seven games, they played backup quarterbacks because starting quarterbacks were hurt, and they won those games. You never know what's going to happen. It's happening again. Cleveland, like, what, four of their best players? Four of their six best players are out on Sunday? Like, all right, that's a chance. You know, the Rams have no receivers. That's a chance. Like, now all of a sudden, you do have those chances. So while on paper, you should probably be trying to lose and get in that position, like, there are things that are clear in front of you. If they would have won that game on Sunday, they would have had a chance to go out to a 5-1 start. Then everything changes. But that game did determine that your season is basically done in terms of being a playoff team.
Let's go to the end of last hour and just play this last bite. Larry Beal, ABC7, we're kind of all over the place, but we have a lot more Raiders coming up. But the A's have their final series, so tickets are pretty pricey. They won't open Mount Davis. Figures. I wouldn't want to watch a game from Mount Davis, but if it's, you know, the goodbye games, open it up if the fans want to get out there and buy the tickets. So everything about John Fisher just feels kind of crappy. And here's Larry Beal saying, you know what, moving forward, I freaking hope this bad luck you're claiming continues.
There's one glimmer of hope. They're going to supposedly play 3 years in Sacramento.
Right.
If other owners and the Players Association had any spine at all, they would say, no, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. We have yet to see a real financing plan for the A's stadium in Las Vegas.
Right.
We're still waiting. Vegas is still waiting. They don't have one. Yes, 18 years. They've tried, and they've screwed it up every time. I don't know that that's going to change. I would love to see another massive failure by this ownership group, and then maybe Major League Baseball would force a sale to somebody locally. And there's a bunch of groups. Don't listen to anybody that says there's no fan base or there's no money in Oakland. That's total nonsense. I can go call three billionaires right now that would buy the team, okay?
No argument from us.
Wish I could call three billionaires. I know, like, one.
Yeah. Although, I have to think about that for you. I think you might know more.
Oh, you think so?
How close is Dana White now? And you don't really know him anymore, like that.
But I could call him.
He can be part of an ownership group. He's extremely. He's
so too.
He's got hundreds of millions.
I know too. Well, look, Larry Beal only has three. I too. I'm gaining ground.
You can't get a Fertitta on the horn pretty quickly.
Three.
I know.
All right. You know what?
You know a lot of wealthy people.
How much does Mark have? Do I have four?
Oh, I thought the first one was Mark Davis.
Oh, no.
Oh, the first one was your boss? Well, do you know her?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, your owner. Are you on texting terms?
I may have been overestimating somebody else's.
With the Adelsons?
I might have been overestimating somebody else's.
Who?
Somebody we work with? On Thursdays?
I don't know what's going on. Okay. I'm not tabulating all these billionaires, you know.
I said I might have been overestimating his wealth. I don't know.
Oh. Derek Stevens? Between the Raiders need to lose and the Adam Hill riddles.
I don't know. That wasn't a riddle. You don't know a wealthy person we work with on Thursdays?
I forgot.
Okay.
To be honest, I actually thought in the building. I'm like, do we have a billionaire?
Does Ari secretly have a bunch of money stashed?
Probably.
I wouldn't be. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if Bobby did.
The Unibobby?
I don't think he spent a cent he's ever made in his life. I feel like he has all of it.
He lives a lowbrow existence.
He's probably invested pretty well.
Let's not go there. Let's go to the Big Four.
Battleborn Injury Lawyers presents the Big Four at Four. Number four.
How much does Griffin have? Where does his money come
from? Don't even try. You know I didn't got that kind of money.
Didn't you just go on a cruise with a family of like 10?
That's true.
I think I just had to take like as much money from my college loans as I had to do for that cruise. So trust me, it wasn't cheap, it wasn't free.
Oh, you got to pay for that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Interesting story coming down. I love football. I get really miserable and kind of hateful about football. I don't want to dox people. Did Dan Campbell really have his address sent out?
He did.
By who?
A classmate of his daughter. A boy in her class, and I have no idea what she is. I would assume it's high school based on somebody doing this. After the 49ers game, while he was still in San Francisco, and his wife was also there, some kid from his daughter's class posted all their information on Snapchat and said, "This mother blanker going for it all the time. Here's his house."
And it's about going for it all the time.
Yeah, fourth downs.
Well, you love going for it. So do I. Personally, for you, we just mentioned them. Who's more dangerous, DW followers or analytics haters? Again, not really analytics, but
DW followers. I mean, look.
I almost said aggressive football, which I know you would correct me on, which I've now taken that out of my phraseology, you don't go for it on fourth down, that's the risky move.
If you punt.
And fourth and one, not fourth and two. I'm not saying fourth and ten.
If you punt on fourth and one, that's aggressive because it gives you less of a chance to win. So yeah, that's the terminology we should use. In terms of doxing, like, first of all, doxing is a weird thing because, as you know more than anybody, it's so easy to find people's information. Like, it's very publicly available for most people. So, like, when Dan Campbell gets doxed, which it sucks, and it's really stupid that a kid would do this, and really unfortunate for the family because there was people at his house when his daughter was home alone, that sucks. But people can find it if they want to. Like, and you kind of reference it there, as I know. My pictures of my house, my dog, things were all over the internet after Dana White attacked me.
They
everywhere.
Pulled... Which dog? Baron or Lucy?
Well, it was Lucy at the time.
They pulled Lucy off the internet?
They were posting...
Did they threaten Lucy?
Well, they were posting pictures of her and obviously like my backyard.
Did they threaten your dog? By the way,
I assume that's what you're doing.
Rest in peace to Lucy.
I know.
Well, did that traumatize her?
Because
she kind of went downhill at a certain point.
Kept her in the house a couple days.
Maybe that. Wow, I didn't know. You never told me that part.
It was terrifying.
They threatened your dog.
It was ridiculous.
Okay.
But I mean, those things do. Like, it's not hard to find people's information. Is what I'm saying. So it sucks when it happens publicly. But if people want to find it, they can. So Dan Campbell moved.
He moved.
The terrible thing is, like, people can find the new place too. So I'm not suggesting people do that. What I'm saying is it just sucks living in a time when people can find all that information about you. And some of it's your own fault. Like, you post some stuff. But also, there's public records of when you buy a house.
Yeah.
People can easily find where you live. It sucks.
Well, I mean, people can always find us.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing a show from a bar or a pool somewhere.
Yeah.
But that we kind of want people to know. We want you to come out.
Sure.
Don't attack us.
No, don't dox us by saying where we are when we're on the radio saying where we are.
Yeah. Number three.
Number three.
You know, I mentioned Sapienza to start the hour. I got to tell you, over on Raider Nation Radio on that morning show, it's kind of sizzling. I listened yesterday to see what they were doing. They got me with a good hook on social media, good description. Whoever's posting the social media on Raider Nation Radio 920. Vincenzo from your paper and Sapienza were really getting on the Raiders. I was impressed.
I mean, it's tough not to.
What exactly? What else can you say?
Yeah, even Antonio Pierce was getting on them. Christian Wilkins was getting on them. Max Crosby was getting, like, everybody's getting on them. It's a performance that was worthy of going after them because it was embarrassing. And as somebody who, you know, I referenced it earlier, goes through the tape and does a Raider Rewind thing where kind of break down what happened. Like, it was tough to watch. Christian Wilkins talked about that yesterday, saying, this is where you have to be a professional and watch it and, like, almost just, like, tape your eyes open and say, look how bad it was. Look how bad you screwed up, and watch it over and over again and see it. And, you know, I think that you have to be mature and do that if you're a part of the team. But anybody that talks about the team, there's no things. Like, I was trying to pick the player of the game. I was like, well, I mean, I guess there was a couple good plays, a couple of players. Like, it was just bad all around them.
Number two.
Number two.
Someone on the O-line when you watch the film? So this is one of the things I heard Vinny say, that the offensive line played poorly, and R.J. Clifford was on with us yesterday, Autumn Windbags. He's a podcaster, not to take away from his legitimacy. He actually said he thought their pass blocking was solid. The run blocking was not. I looked up on PFF, and all but one guy scored at least in decent range.
Yeah, pass blocking was far superior than run blocking, for sure. And I think a big part of that is that Colton Miller actually finally played well. He's
right.
Really struggled the first 2 weeks.
He had graded, I think, a 75-6. I think he was the second highest lineman for the game.
But he had been off to a slow start. A lot of that, he missed the entire training camp, wasn't able to practice at all. And then he finally gets out on the field without, you know, any real practice. And it's tough. You can't really ease your way in when you're playing, like, the Chargers week one against Bosa and Mack.
So as we're watching Minshew kind of start to dance very early in the pocket, is that battle scars?
A little bit.
I mean,
if he's
getting decent pass blocking, why is he kind of freaked out?
Well, even when the pass block is decent, like, they're sending a lot of people because everybody's at the line of scrimmage because they know they can just, you know, pin their ears back and go because you can't run the ball. So, like, they know in an obvious passing situations. Here's the other thing. It is, look, there's a lot. I think Getsy has taken some unfair criticism. I think there was some definite fair criticism of him this week, and that they got very predictable. Looking back, it was 1955 football. It was run first down, run second down, pass third medium. Run first down, run second down, pass third medium. It was just a formula. You can't do that. It's not, like I said, not 1955. And when you do that and you get very predictable, everybody sees your tendencies, you're going to have a very hard time running anything. So even though the offensive line held up at times, they were kind of overwhelmed. It was a very tough situation for everybody the way that the offense was running.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Oasis Bar and Grill on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, Adam, we were talking about offensive line with the Raiders and some progress with the pass blocking, but because they can't run the ball, even the pass blocking is tough, and Minshew's shaken. We'll get into in the 5 o'clock hour what they can do at quarterback if it's time to turn the page. You were talking about maybe changing the focus of the season, 3 games into the season. I'm not laughing at that, but it seems a little early. One last thing on the O-line. JPJ, early signs in real games. What'd you say?
I don't think it was enough to judge anything. Plus, it's probably not where he's going to be playing. They had him in for an injured Dylan Parham. He played on the right side. He'll probably play on the left side. I think he had some aggressiveness, some toughness to the line. But I think it's going to be a little bit before he's, you know, really taking advantage of what he can bring to the unit. Plus, you know, Cody Whitehair struggled at left guard, but he does seem to be kind of the key to helping the communication that has been bad when he's not on the field. So it's kind of 6-1, half a dozen of the other. He's holding them together in terms of communicating everything, but isn't really doing great as a blocker. They're in a bit of a conundrum. And then on the other side, obviously, Thayer Munford got hurt. DJ Glaze come in, was fine. Didn't get overwhelmed, which I think is what they wanted to see. But they've now got injuries and, you know, some, you know, lack of solid play.
This is crazy to say, but for the first time since the Raiders have been here, I think most of the communities were excited to go and watch UNLV, at least with the hope that they can win and play good football. At Allegiant Stadium, Charles Arbuckle is with us. Charles Arbuckle is with us. He's going to be on the call of the game. What's up, Charles?
How you doing?
We're good. We're good. It's interesting football times here in Vegas because the Raiders are struggling and the market really hasn't been accustomed outside of last year to UNLV being a pretty good program. Remind me, maybe you've done a UNLV game over the years. Have you before? Is this the first one you've done?
No, I did one in COVID, during the COVID time period. So, yeah, Marcus Arroyo and that crew. And, it's been a while.
Okay, so just give me your general feelings on the lead-up to this game because it's obviously a big game for both teams. You got all this conference stuff swirling, and UNLV's feeling pretty good about itself.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that I like about UNLV is what they've been able to do, and Barry Odom clearly has recruited well. Matt Saluka is a guy that, you know, maybe he's not getting it done through the air, but he's clearly able to run the football effectively. I think at some point we got to see if he can throw the football, and they haven't been tested yet for that. But to come out and beat Kansas, that was a big game for them, and they looked very good against Houston. And I think the defense has really played well. Jackson Woodard, Cam Oliver, whose dad played, I played against his dad in high school when he was at Clemens, and his brother was on my team, rest his soul, Jared Oliver, and then his uncle, Winnie Oliver, played for the Panthers. So familiarity there, it's neat to see that. But I'll say this, I have played against Fresno State when I was in college. I've watched them play. That's a tough bunch. And, even with Tim Skipper being the interim head coach, I'm just wondering how long are they going to hold that tag on his head, you know, and he's a guy that's been at UNLV and saw some of those lean years. They've got a good ball club, and I think this is going to be a really good game to watch. Vegas is already, you know, I'm not a gambling man, but I think the line is pretty close, so I'm interested in kicking off and calling it.
What does the Rebel defense have to do to slow down Fresno's Mikey Keene, a quarterback?
Yeah, I think they have to play really effective defense, get to him, and don't let Mikey Keene get comfortable. You know, he seems like when he just, you know, the film that I've watched, and I'm getting ready to go through another couple of games, when he's comfortable, he can really get hot. And I think, you know, completing close to 67% of his passes, he's had some turnovers. That's where UNLV has to make sure if he's going to turn that ball over, keep him doing that. Their defense also has been filthy on third down, 20%. Third down average. So if you can keep him from getting comfortable and getting offensive rhythm, it's just like what we saw with the Panthers there against the Raiders. Andy Dalton hits that first third down, and how did they go? They just kept going. They were 2 of 22 leading into that. So you got to make him uncomfortable and not let him get in a rhythm. And then you also got to make them run the ball. And when they do run the ball, you rally to it. That's what I like about this UNLV defense. They rally to the football really well. They come with dog blitz and dog pressures when they force you to throw. They're going to have to do that and keep UNLV behind the chains.
So you mentioned the pass game has to get a little more efficient, get on the same page with UNLV. Your thoughts on Sluka in general as a playmaker and game manager?
I think he's really done a nice job as a game manager. But, man, if I'm Ricky White, I'm thinking, when is the ball going to really come my way? I mean, he's really the main guy that has been effective in that offense. So I think the one thing for me is, can he do it with multiple people and get it to multiple people so it's not one person that defenses have to take away? And right now, if I'm a DC, that's what I look at. If I'm UNLV's Fresno State's defensive coordinator, Coyle, I'm saying, okay, I know where he likes to go. Let's take that away from him and force him to beat us in other ways. And, oh, by the way, he's great with his legs. Maybe we come with eight, we pressure him. You know, those guys are going to do some – they're probably going to do some things to try to get him off kilter too, so he can't feel like he can run the football like he has so far this season.
The game is on FS1. It's UNLV at Allegiant Stadium against Fresno State. Charles Arbuckle is on the game with Chris Foster's. Again, it's on FS1. It's a 12:30 start on Saturday. That deal with Ricky White is really interesting because they also have another, you know, good receiver and great return man in Jacob DeJesus, a good pass-catching tight end. I wonder how you keep your head in the game, you know, as a receiver, and you played tight end, when maybe a team just completely flips its style and is going to be mostly a running team. How do you make sure that those guys, you know, stay on point, and at some point they're going to be important?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you look at the first two games, they really didn't have to throw the football, right? I mean, they really didn't have to diversify their offense. That game against Kansas made them do what they felt comfortable with. But I know with Brennan Marion and the go-go offense, you know, I've known him. I've watched him over the years and gotten to know him. I am sure they're going to keep working on the passing game. And the good thing for them is having that bye week. And so it'll be interesting to see how they come out of the bye week, because whatever happens in those games previously to the bye week, you generally work and you self-scout yourself and you start saying, okay, how can we be more effective? How can we get it to Jacob? How can we get it to Calio? How can we get it to different guys? And get it out of the backfield, too, to some guys that you have as weapons that you've used in the past. I think we'll see more of that, but I'm interested to see if he doesn't get comfortable early in the game with getting the ball to different weapons, what that's going to look like later in the game. Because I think that's a really important piece for him from a confidence standpoint. He can throw the ball. He just hadn't done it really effectively. If he's 43% on the year, that's not good. But you've been able to win because his legs have really carried him. And I'm interested to see what they self-scouted themselves and how they're going to really apply that, because, you know, your schedule gets tougher. Fresno State's going to be tough. Syracuse is playing some good ball. Then you start getting into some of your Mountain West schedule, Oregon State. You know, they're going to have some games coming up where they're going to have to be able to throw the football. You can't rely on your quarterback to run it like he has. And I'm just interested to see how that looks once the season really gets going.
When you were in college, were you ever involved in a series that was kind of lopsided? UNLV's series against Fresno is really interesting. They've lost six straight, but the last three have been by 7, 8, and 7. And I've been at all those games working the sidelines on radio, and it was like a little thing here, a little thing there, play made by the other side in Fresno, got them over the top. Is it hard to break through when you consistently come up short, but like really close short?
Yeah, I think it is. I think when you're getting bludgeoned, right, it's one thing. But I can remember in college, we got beat by Oklahoma my freshman year, the first game I ever played in college football. And the Boomer Sooner was so tired afterwards. Jamel Holloway, we didn't know where the ball was. They beat us like 38-3. The next year, we played Nebraska. We got a little bit closer. And we didn't beat them, but we were in Nebraska. The next year, we throttled them because we knew finally, okay, you have to understand how to get over that hump. And I agree with you. I think it's just a mindset. Because what you start doing is thinking the other shoe is going to drop. And the team that's been on the winning side kind of knows you know that. And until you can prove that you can just get through whatever that is, whatever mental block that is as a team, it's always interesting to see. But once it happens, then you can see guys looking around at each other. You're like, yeah, this is just a ball game. Let's go take care of it and let's go win it.
Hey, let's close on a couple of things. One, I don't know if you've got an injury update on Malik Sherrod. But kind of wondering if he's going to be a go. I saw Skipper say the other day, still questionable. And I was, you know, trying to track how much Corey Foreman has played, which that story is kind of fascinating. Fresno got a commit from a former USC guy who was arguably a top 10 recruit in the country. And I don't know. What do you know about Corey Foreman right now?
Yeah, I have. I mean, like I said, I only know what I've read, and I haven't gotten into. And, they, you know, once we talk to the coaches later in the week, we'll get a better idea about that. I think the best thing from that perspective is to see what he's done to this point and see how good he can play, because he might be the guy that we have to really focus on and lock in. But Malik Sherrod is who I anticipate. If he's any way healthy, he's going to get some time and be able to make some plays for this team, because I think that's what, you know, as much as he hasn't been able to play or been nicked up, if he can play in this game, I would imagine that we will see him and he'll get some time this week.
Charles, we appreciate a couple minutes. We'll see you on Saturday.
Okay, man. Y'all have a good one. Take care.
You too. Thank you. There he is. Charles Arbuckle has worked for everyone, calling football games, doing analysis, podcasts. Yeah, Corey Foreman's fascinating because he was a top 10 recruit going to USC. He's landed at Fresno. He's played to like an 88 rating on PFF, which is awesome, but he just hasn't played that much. Which, again, is a reminder, whatever the stars are, even when you transfer, just like a fellow USC transfer in Malachi Nelson at Boise, like, still not playing. Rep doesn't really do you much when you get to the next stop. If you can play, then you're on the field. If you're still developing.
Wasn't long ago UNLV had a five-star quarterback.
They've had multiple, right?
Yeah.
They've had multiple. They had a hometown dude, and everyone kept saying he's going to start. They had Harrison Bailey, and it's like we kept telling people, we're out of practice. Like, these guys ain't the starting quarterback. Sorry, it's just not working.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Oasis Bar and Grill on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Adam, are you still writing about the Mountain West Conference as you collect information?
Oh, yeah.
Can I tell you something else that's interesting? So I see Chris Murray from Nevada Sportsnet, and we're on in Reno right now. This hour is brought to you by Battleborn Injury Lawyers. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada, 766-1400 is the number. Of course, offices in downtown Vegas, Summerlin, Henderson, and in the Reno area, 766-1400. Brian Sandoval just released a statement.
Oh, good.
And it basically says, hey, we're in contact with the commissioner, Gloria Navarez. There's really not much more beyond that, but I mentioned this yesterday as a possibility. What if the Pac-12 just, I'll put it this way, went straight to, oh, UNLV's dragging its feet? Let's go to Nevada. Would that not be a hoot?
Well, I think the problem is, again, as I mentioned earlier, San Diego State and Boise State already seem upset.
And why are they upset?
Because it's not what they were promised.
They wanted to get away from everyone else.
Not even away from everybody else. Like, they wanted to cut the fat for sure.
Right.
And they kind of did. They were like, all right, we got the top four choices from the conference. All right, we're good. UNLV might have been nice, but all right, we're good with these four. And then the plan was, all right, let's add a couple more. Like, wait, this is now the entire conference.
Yeah.
Like, where did this come from?
Sandoval, our leadership is monitoring the current situation and is in frequent contact with the Mountain West Commissioner, Gloria Navarez, about the future of the conference. We will continue to work towards the best solutions for the University of Nevada, Reno, and our student-athletes. Okay.
Let's check the time. You know what? Reno is a very lovely institution.
I mean, the guy runs the school. You can't really label him as a turncoat if they took UNLV's bid. Could be the best thing for the school, arguably. Although my argument the last couple of days has been $18 million in what could be a lot of taxpayer money shouldn't go to this buyout. That's not really a great way to spend our money in either market.
Yeah, I don't.
But it would be a freaking hoot, would it not? Talk about fanning the flames of the rivalry.
The real issue comes up. I mean, I still think they're probably adding three Mountain West teams, not just one.
Have you talked to anyone around UNLV who's like, you know what, now we kind of do want Nevada to come with us?
No.
They're standing strong on that. Okay.
Well, they just don't care.
Yeah.
I don't think they think about. I mean, it's a fantastic school and great athletic program. But
Brooks was the region who was quoted last week saying, hey, they are tied together.
No. And then,
I thought it was.
No, you're right. Yeah. Heather Brown was not the one.
She's
the one that's been rational.
Right. And then you said she was reaching out to everyone saying,
yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. She's been, I think, great and level-headed and correct through the entire process.
So we got a minute here before we get to Sammy. I know this is a story that's being built. Has anything developed in the last 45 minutes since we talked about it for about 15 at the start of the show? Or do we have to save this for the paper?
No, we got the Gloria Navarro's comment and we got Sandoval comments.
Okay. There's not going to be a resolution today, right?
I thought there was until the lawsuit got filed, right, and then things changed,
and
for
if,
sure.
And if you missed it, we opened the show talking about Pac-12 filing a lawsuit saying this exit fee and penalty stuff, like, not on the up and up. The contract is not binding.
Yeah. But it's a side note, but also it's funny that I was doing a spot earlier in Oregon, and they said, hey, the last three guests we've had about this topic have had to leave in the middle of the interview to work on stories. So just let us know if anything happens. And my first thought was like, oh, Steve would not go for that. It's immediately what I thought of.
You can leave their spot. Not real keen on you leaving the show right now. We're hanging out at Oasis Bar and Grill on Decatur, south of Tropicana. You come in, you buy an entree, you get a free dessert. I'm getting some of that cheesecake. That special is good anytime, 24/7.
It's Cofield and Company's Eye on Sports Gambling, presented by Oasis Bar and Grill, only on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, let's bring in Sammy P. What's up, Sam?
Where should we start, pal? Where do you want to start?
I'm not in Survivor, but I'm watching the decimation over 3 weeks. This is crazy.
I went out. I had Commanders. Commanders killed me last night. I had Cincinnati.
Oh, no. Oh, so you were part of the mix since he took out in week one and in week three.
So I didn't have the balls to go against the Patriots, the mighty, mighty Patriots in week one. But I thought to myself, they can't go 0-3, which is a big mistake. Big mistake in the NFL. I've been talking about this on the morning show, and I bought a bell for my desk. Anytime I say something can't happen in the NFL or any of my co-hosts say it, we're going to just ring the bell. Because in week three, the following teams won. Broncos, Giants, Rams, Commanders, Panthers. I was on a show last week where the host told me the Panthers were going to go 0-17.
Can't happen. They can't win.
They won't win a game, Adam. They can't win a game all year. What are you talking about? Like, these extreme narratives, one way or the other, are just ridiculous. And we've watched this league long enough to know you must expect the unexpected. That being said, I didn't expect to be bounced from Survivor in week number three, but there's only 642 people left out of 14,000.
It's crazy. Now, when you say anything can happen, you're right. Anything can happen. But the top four picks in Survivor losing in the same week is pretty wild.
Oh, no doubt. And imagine if we just had the hindsight to parlay two of them together, let alone all four of them together, the underdogs. Oof. I'm telling you, man, if I could just get tomorrow's newspaper one time, it would be so great, you would never hear from me again. Well, I still do this show because I love you guys. But if I could get Monday's paper one time in my life, I would get so crazy with some of these bets you can make. Parlaying. How about a parlay on the Panthers over the Raiders and the Commanders over the Bengals? I mean, that would have been in the 15-16-1 range.
It would have. Now, I don't know if it would be the same going forward, because I think one of the things we've learned is Jaden Daniels is actually pretty good.
And you know what's funny? I was reading through the papers this morning because we do a national morning show and I have to know everything now, more than usual. What's the front page of the paper in D.C.? Can they win the NFC East? Of course. Why can't we just appreciate a Monday night showdown? Why can't we appreciate him being awesome on national television? We have to immediately take it too far and put expectations of now winning the division. That is why people just hate some of these unfair expectations that are set by the media in sports. Jaden Daniels is an exciting player. He can do basically anything on the football field. But already, after one game on Monday night, we are anointing him as the rookie of the year, and of a football team, ironically, formerly named the football team, that might now contend for the NFC East. We can never just have nice things and appreciate them in the moment.
We do have nice things. We have the hockey club now. I like that. I like the Utah Hockey Club.
I like Blizzard.
Okay, or Yeti.
You like Yeti?
Yeah. That'd be good.
Okay. All right.
I don't mind it. I mean, those are nice things. But I did want to ask one more thing about Survivor. We are, as you said, somehow down to 642 after week three, when in 2020 there was only 675, when there was 10% of the entry fees, which is crazy. Will this still go the distance? I saw a lot of people saying it still will. I feel like it might end early.
So somebody did a study on how far it would go. A data scientist basically grouped the probability together. And the number that they came out with was week 16. That was the highest likelihood of when Circa Survivor will end. I believe it was Unabated Sports that did that. So the most probable end week is week 16. But, man, it might not make it out of October. And here's the other side of the Survivor conversation. How much is an entry worth right now? So Circa claims it's worth, you know, about $10,000 or so. But if you go to this website, SurvivorSweat.com, there is somebody selling a full entry for $40,000 right now. Not to say that they're going to get it, but already after 3 weeks, somebody asking 40 large for a $1,000 Survivor entry.
Insanity. This whole thing has been crazy. Crazy ending to the Colorado game, and I know you were on the wrong side of the Hail Mary in regulation to push it to overtime by Colorado.
That was one of my biggest bets of the season. I thought Baylor making the quarterback change was going to unleash their offense. It did. They had a 14-point lead in the second quarter. They had a 7-point lead with 3 minutes to go, and the crazy part was nobody sees this play, of course, because we only see the end. Baylor has a field goal from about 40 yards to go up 10 with 2 minutes to go. And I'm watching the game at my house thinking, if he misses this kick, this could get ugly. And, of course, one of the worst kicks ever, because Baylor played for the field goal with a college kicker, and he misses it. And 2 seconds to go, I got Baylor plus two, Baylor money line. You got one job. You knock the ball down. How do you let one guy get free in the back of the end zone? Dave Aranda, just a horrible, horrible decision, the way that he lined those guys up. Yeah, Baylor plus two, Baylor money line, up seven, 2 seconds to go, 50-yard line. You lose that game one time out of 100, and that was the one time, unfortunately.
The worst part, Sam, I know you know everything now because you have to follow everything for the morning show. You saw that they practiced the defense – and they had a play call for it. It's called Victory Cigar. So Aranda called in to the linebacker who had the dot on. All right, Victory Cigar, run Victory Cigar. And that's what they did.
My favorite part of that play was the guy whose job was to contain. He was supposed to basically stay with Shedeur Sanders and follow him whichever way he was going to go. And if you watch the play, it was obvious he was going to spin around, roll left, and throw deep. How does the contain guy run right into the ass of the defensive tackle? I watched the replay. I'm like, you had one job, the quarterback. He ran into the pile like it was a fumble. And that allowed the free rip, great throw, maybe better catch right at the very end, the tip of the ball almost touching the ground. But that's the NFL. That's college football. We complain all the time about bad beats, yet we get up the next day and we bet the next games. It's maddening, though. That was one of those games, guys. I stared at the ceiling for about 10 minutes and just pondered life. How does that happen?
Especially because Baylor then answers with a touchdown, but they fumble right before they cross the goal line, and they would have gone for two. So either you're going to cover the plus one or get the outright win if they make the two, and the guy just fumbles as he crosses the goal line.
This is a really nice therapy session. I could have used this on Saturday night or Sunday morning.
Grinding you down.
Uh-huh. Yeesh. I know.
Sammy P, yeah. BetQL. All right, Georgia, Alabama. Georgia on the road, 2.5. What are we doing?
Bama's so physical, so tough. this number is a little high on the Georgia side. I thought Bama should have been the favorite, to be honest with you. It is a true home game. It's not a neutral. It's not in, like, Atlanta or Dallas or anything. I think Bama should be favored. So I'll probably look to take a little 2.5. It's 2.5 at a couple places. Funny, though, because you got Circa at 1.5, South Point at 1.5, Superbook at 2, and then you got DraftKings and FanDuel and Caesars at 2.5. So the public clearly looking to bet the road favorite here, but you got your Vegas shops a little bit lower, 1.5, 2. I like DeBoer. I think football finally, guys, is fun at Alabama again. And Kenny White was on Chicken Dinner today, and he talked about a little bit of that. You know, under Saban, it was a job, especially at the end. Under DeBoer, it feels fun again. These guys are playing awesome on offense. They're better on offense than they were last year. And Jalen Milroe's right there. How about Jalen Milroe? If they can win this game and he puts up big numbers, does he not become the Heisman favorite over Cam Ward? I would say he does.
Well, I think Cam Ward's going to have a monster season, and a lot of it depends on how Miami does. Ward's plus 450, along with Milroe at 450. We're done with the Texas quarterback debate, right? Neither one of them is winning the Heisman.
I got a text last Friday. Hey, do you like Arch Manning at 10-1 to win the Heisman? I almost hung up.
10-1?
No, I don't like him at 10-1. Because Sark has proven one thing everywhere he's been over the years. He likes the upper-class guy. And I always thought that Manning was going to play a couple of games, maybe two or three, and then eventually they go back to Quinn Ewers. So those two are going to cannibalize each other in the market. And it's so interesting because the guy that that texted me, Arch Manning, last Friday, 10-1, question mark. I texted him back today and go, hey, he's 60-1. He texted me back, nah, I don't like it. Okay, so you wanted to know about 10-1. But 60-1, you don't like it anymore. Yeah, they're not going to win it. And look, the Heisman Trophy, I believe the last 5 years or 6 years has gone to an SEC player. That is the best conference. It is the highest power-rated conference. It honestly feels like the best quarterback from the SEC will win the award, whether that's Jackson Dart or Quinn Ewers or Jalen Milroe. I like Cam Ward a lot, but that schedule is so easy, and he's going to have to put up Jaden Daniels type numbers to get it done.
So in Circa Million, the Cofield and Company tickets doing pretty well. We actually put up a 5-0 this week, so we're 11-4 now, which is really good, I think.
Hell yeah!
I have some early leans and likes, so maybe you can scare me off some of these. I could just eliminate them from the discussion. Falcons -1 against the Saints.
I like that one a lot, even though they kill me inside the 5-yard line on offense. That's 2 weeks out of three now. They've done really dumb stuff. They go all the way down the field and get cute inside the five. But I would sell the Saints for sure.
Broncos +7.5 against the Jets.
Man, so crazy. These dogs, 5.5 or more, I believe 14-2 against the number right now. Just keep it going. Why not?
Chargers, very beat up. Tackle issues. Wide receiver issues, and most importantly, Herbert issues. They're getting 8.5 against the Chiefs at home.
So we'll wait and see what the contest number is. I'm in no rush to bet the Chargers now. We could see this number cross 10 if the left tackle, the right tackle, and the quarterback are all out. That's a pass. That's a cross off for me because we just don't know the health right now for the Chargers.
Last 20 seconds. Browns +1 here in Las Vegas against the Raiders.
Oh, God. Give me the bleach. No chance. Don't bet that game. Here's my favorite. Take Chicago. They're going to pound the Rams. The Rams had the win of the year. The Rams are banged up. Take the Bears -2.5, -3. I love that one early.
BetQL, you can find them Monday to Friday. Also, find BetQL up on Instagram. Sammy P doing a good job in his new gig, and he's national, so he's got to know everything now. So these spots are getting even better. We appreciate it, buddy.
All right, gentlemen, have fun. Enjoy the Oasis.
We will. We will. Yes, today's spot, an everyday spot at 4:45. Our Eye on Sports Gambling is brought to you by Oasis Bar and Grill on Decatur, south of Trop. True local bar. Great sports bar, rockin' menu, 24/7 breakfast. And right now, if you buy an entree, you get a free dessert. Their cheesecake is pretty exclusive to Oasis Bar and Grill, so take advantage of that. Buy an entree, get a free dessert. That's a hell of a deal. Follow them on IG, Instagram, Oasis Bar and Grill.